If you ask your uncle and your father this question, if you're surrounded by 100 of the enemy and they want to kill you and they're heavily armed and you're surrounded by yourself, what do you do? You know what they're going to tell you? They're going to tell you what I told them. Kill them all. Mm. In other words, don't go into a scenario looking at the bad stuff. Go in looking about how you're going to take care of it. And that's how I've always looked at it.
Ladies and gentlemen, and anyone else who is here, happy holidays. My name is Dom Lemoore, and you are listening to the Black Man Talking Emotions podcast. One's family is the most important thing in life. I look at it this way. One of these days, I'll be over in a hospital somewhere with four walls around me. And the only people who will be with me will be my family.
Dom, the difference between my era and this era is so staggering, it's even hard for me to explain. For hundreds of years, certain things never changed. You were born in the technical era. About 1975 is when all this technology came.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a story about when I went down to visit my relatives in Mississippi. They had a dairy farm. And on that dairy farm, they grew cotton, they grew peas, they grew everything they needed. They had milk from the cows, they grew chickens, they had ponds where they fished. The only thing they bought from the store was flour and sugar. Can you imagine that now?
Yeah.
So then when we come down there, in honor of our visit, they go out, they get this poor calf. It's different when you see this stuff happen as opposed to going to McDonald's.
Yeah.
They bring out this calf, and my granduncle, he shoots the calf. The first shot misses and hits him in the nose. It explodes. It's all gory and everything. And we're city people. You know, we're like, whoa. Then he shoots him in the head, right? Calf goes down. All the cows start moving, man. It was the strangest thing. It's like they knew.
And he did this all just in front of you, like, hey, I'm going to shoot this cow really quick. And y'all just standing there and he shot the cow.
Calf. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. This is where I'm trying to show you the difference between back then, how real it was.
Yeah.
As opposed to the packages you see today. Then he took the calf and tied a rope around the calf's hind legs, walked over to a tree, threw the rope over the branch of a tree, and hung the calf upside down by his hind legs. Mm-hmm. After that, he took this gigantic butcher knife and stuck the knife in the calf's scrotum and brought it down to his throat because the calf is hanging upside down, and all the entrails fall out. And then they clean the inside with a sponge and water and stuff. The heart, the entrails, the liver, the spleen, everything's on the ground. The dogs eat it right there. This was something that we just hadn't seen. When they get through, it looks like the ribs you go to the store to buy. Mm-hmm. And everything that they did, their whole food came from the ground. They didn't buy anything from the store. I think when I was real young, the only hamburger place I think was White Castle. And they were like 12 cents for a White Castle. You know, I didn't have air conditioning until I bought my first house.
Really?
It didn't exist. Like in school, you just sat up there and sweat. At night, during the summertime, I'd wake up in the morning and you'd be laying in a puddle of sweat. It was normal. Mm-hmm. I can't do that now. I've lost that ability. I got to have air conditioning. I can't sleep it up.
Did you have like a little black book do you still have a black book that has all your addresses and all of your ways to get to places? Like, do you still have that?
You know, I still have one. I do.
Do you still use it?
Oh, no. No, no. These names and things, I just keep it just a keepsake. These are names of people I knew 30 and 40 years ago. I'm sure the numbers have changed. But, you know, in the 80s, we moved up to Rolodex, you know?
Yeah. Well, okay, so you gave an example of like the country, and of course, because of country living is going to be different. Even now, it's different living out in the country. The first time I ever saw an Amish person, I was in Pennsylvania, and they lived exactly the way that you just said. Still to this day, they live that way.
Yeah.
Give an example of living in the city in St. Louis when you were younger, how it's so much different then than now.
You have to understand there were no such thing as malls. Malls did not exist.
At all. Like they didn't have any collection of stores together. Like it was always separate.
No, this is the situation. The county as you know it today, was a rural area, farmland and stuff. All those like Creve Coeur Lake. Once we headed out to Creve Coeur Lake, you started seeing woods and stuff.
Yeah.
They've cleared all that out now. But this used to be in the counties of St. Louis, when you're thinking about the further areas out, like Wentzville and stuff like that, that was all woods. So they had, in the city was where everything was. Downtown area was bustling during Christmas. They had maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 stores. The big ones being Famous and Bar and Sticks, Baron Fuller. Have you ever heard of those?
I've heard of Famous and Bar. But not the other.
Famous and Bar is Macy's, and Sticks Baron Fuller is Dillard's. Mm-hmm. But they had Green Street, Leading Man. They had all these stores and things. Everything was downtown. And when you went downtown, Famous or Macy's, they used to have this big window with trains that went in it and, you know, Santa robots and elves and all like that. It was great back then. One of the differences is that on the sixth floor of Famous, I still remember this, on the sixth floor of Famous, the whole store was Toyland, everything. Mm,
okay.
So we used to go up there, my grandmother, we used to go up there and watch the white kids play with the toys. Well, we couldn't touch them. You got to understand. And I'll never forget this as long as I live, to show you how much things were different racially. We're standing up watching these white kids play with the toys because their grandmother told us don't touch nothing. So we're watching them play, and this lady comes by with her five-year-old kid. And they had these little blow-up dolls that you can put their arms and legs around a pole. Yeah. They still make them today. They just hang on to the pole. And there were some black dolls hanging on the pole. And this lady came right up. The lady was like, look at the little niggers on the pole. Look at the little niggers on the pole. Just, wow. I mean, this is the era that I grew up in.
Yeah.
Now, in our area where I lived, black people had their own city. We had our own doctors, own stores, undertakers.
Yeah.
We were a community.
What part of the city was that again?
It was growing. The original black community was downtown.
Downtown, okay.
In your project area. And then it started spreading west. Blacks started spreading west. Like before I went into high school, there were white kids that sold there. Mm-hmm. When I moved on the north side, you know where Natural Bridge is in the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once we moved over there, you had to watch where you were going. We couldn't cross West Florida because the Fonzarellis and the Greasers would beat you up. So we had our own city, and you didn't leave that city. If I were to go out in Clayton and be walking down the street in Clayton or Ladue or something, police would immediately pull you over. Immediately, and want to know what you were doing out there and why you were there.
In that part of town, yeah.
Yeah. So as time went, we spread it. The black population spread it. And I remember in 1965, I started at the post office. A black couple moved out to Cool Valley. You know where Cool Valley is?
No.
In St. Louis? That's in North County.
Okay.
And they burned crosses on the people's lawn to show you how things were back then.
Yeah. Man.
That was regular, though.
Regular.
Yes. I mean, you lived inside of that. You didn't know anything different.
Were the trolleys still around at this point, or did they already take those up?
When I was a kid in grade school, the streetcars still ran.
Well, when did they take those out?
Probably somewhere around mid-60s or what have you.
Okay.
They also had these cars they called service cars that ran a route like a bus. Mm-hmm. They were black owned. They got ran out of business when the taxi cabs and stuff came.
Okay.
But they ran like on a bus line. Like they would run the same route, similar to a bus, not on the same streets, but in the same direction. you know, from the inner city to downtown.
I'm always curious about that because, you know, when you think about like Meet Me in St. Louis, the famous song, and that is the trolley song. And St. Louis was this big city with trolleys, and that's how people got around. My great grandfather always told me about how he walked along the trolley when he took my grandmother home the first time they hung out. He just walked along, and I'm like, where was this trolley? And he was talking about it was in Webster. And I'm like, what? They had trolleys in Webster? And it blows my mind. But I brought that up just to kind of get more of a image of what the city looked like, how you got around the city. But the racism part, it doesn't surprise me, of course. Like whenever I hear about St. Louis outside of like people from St. Louis, no one really looks at the city as if it's not racist. And it's still very separated. So with it being separated the way it is now, I can only imagine how it was back then when they weren't afraid to call you the N-word in your face.
Oh, no. You heard that a lot. As far as the city, it was slightly under 1 million people, if you can imagine that.
No, yeah. I know. I heard. I mean, they lost a lot of the population because of the county, right?
Yes. St. Louis at one time was one of the largest cities in the United States.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
I believe it. I know. It's the gateway to the West. I know what it is.
Yeah, this is before Phoenix and Houston and Dallas and all those places grew. You know, Detroit was huge at the time. I don't know what happened to Detroit and St. Louis. I don't know who to blame for the decline, the way it went down.
The way that I hear, of course, with Detroit, the big businesses moved from the city. And it's the same in St. Louis. The stuff that were downtown, all those factories that are abandoned now, those breweries, all of this stuff that was a huge booming success. They were like, yo, we're moving out to the county. We want to get away from these black people. That's pretty much what I have studied from the history.
Well, the interesting thing about that is you wonder, well, why didn't that happen to Kansas City?
Yeah.
You know, why didn't that happen to Milwaukee? You know, why didn't that happen in other areas? But Detroit and St. Louis, for some reason, they really, really, really went down.
Yeah.
But another thing that was different, my grandfather died when I was 16. So I was living with my grandmother. So getting a car, going to college, any of that stuff was off the board for me, unless I did it myself.
Yeah.
So when I got my first car, I had a friend drive me home and park it in front of my house because I couldn't drive. I didn't have anybody teach me how to drive. Mm-hmm. So at night, to show you the difference in the way things were back then, now 3 or 4 people have cars. Back then, maybe 1 in every 5 families had a car. Mm. So I taught myself how to drive by driving through the city because there's no traffic at night.
Yeah.
It's nothing like it is today with the hustle and the bustle and the way things are. The distances, I remember my grandparents used to tell me that they used to walk 2 miles to school.
Yeah.
And we would be like uphill both ways, right, Grandpa?
And, you know, my Uncle Mark and people, they do that all the time too. They do the same thing where they're consistently talking about how, you know, it was much harder. I had to walk through the snow. I had to walk through the sleet. And this and that. And I'm like, oh, my God. And 2 miles, I was like, there's no way. But now when I grow up, I'm like, yeah, I bet you that's exactly how it was.
If you come to St. Louis, I'm going to have to take you on a ride to show you. You would not believe how far we walk to school every day. You would not believe it. We talking 10 and 15 blocks. Rain, snow, just like they told you. See, it was so different. It's like the cowboy days to now. Things hadn't changed like that until technology came in.
Yeah.
People were using coal to warm themselves for 100 years and stuff. Then all of a sudden technology comes and everything changes. Everything changes.
Were you in like school that was mixed race or was it just a black school or white school?
My first through 8th grade was all black.
Okay.
And then we moved over on in North St. Louis, which was mixed. And that was my first time being around white people.
Do you think because, of course, you were at the black school, they just didn't have the funding for school buses and stuff like that? And then when you got to the mixed school, they may not have just wanted to send buses to that neighborhood? Like, why exactly do you think you had to walk?
Because of the technology. People didn't have cars and things.
Well, I'm talking about they had school buses, right?
Back then, you went to schools that was in your neighborhood.
Okay.
Your neighborhood today is probably 5 houses down and 6 houses in either direction. Our neighborhood then were blocks.
Okay.
Our neighborhood was viewed in blocks, not in one street.
Well, no, I understand what you're saying. Because, of course, when I was younger, I lived in the city. So, like, on the south side, it was all about the blocks. It was the city blocks where you lived at. So I understand what you're saying. But that what you're saying pretty much is instead of having a school bus pick everybody up, it was designed where the school was in the area where they were like, well, this is close enough for people to walk.
It's hard for me to explain the difference in how people looked at things back then.
Yeah.
Back then, you had to take care of yourself. There were no school buses. People didn't get bused. You walked. If your school was 5 miles away, you walked 5 miles away.
Mm.
In the city, when my mother was going to school, there was only 3 black high schools.
Yeah.
Sumner, Vashon, and Washington Tech. So wherever you were at in the city, you had to walk to those places. When I came up, the black schools was Sumner, Vashon, Hadley Tech, mm-hmm. and Soldan. Beaumont just started getting integrated when I came. So did McKinley and those other schools. But you only had 3 basic black schools where all the people were black.
Yeah.
So you had to walk those distances. Now, we moved from a street called Finney. Our church was over on West Bell. You have no idea the distance this is. But it would take us over an hour to walk it. And we would do it because my grandmother would give us 15 cents to catch the bus.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to keep the money.
Yeah.
So we would leave an hour early for church. If church was at 9, we would leave at 8. And you'd walk an hour to church and walk an hour back. I don't know, 20, 30 blocks. I don't know.
And see, that answers some of the questions of when people my age are like, what did you do with all your time if you didn't have a phone and this and that? You were walking most of the time. It sounded like you were trying to get from A to B most of your extra time you had throughout the day.
In the words of my grandparents, you cracking, but you facking. And you know what else? When you were kids, we had tops, spinning tops, mm-hmm. Jacks, guys played bowling back because you didn't have toys. And we had army men, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing was marbles.
Yeah.
Marbles. The other thing, the difference between when I was a kid and time now is the pristineness of the era. In other words, no one talked about sex. Somebody suggested how I got here, and I wanted to jump on it because I told him my mother didn't do that. And I was like about 14. It's hard. I know that sounds unbelievable.
No. But it makes sense. I mean, we consistently talk about how in some scenarios, you just didn't talk about it, especially in the black community. People just didn't feel like they were supposed to talk about this or this was not acceptable to talk about.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. And when you talk about everything else with the city, it blows my mind. Cause of course, when I lived in the city on the south side, I was getting bused to the county. So just within that short time from the 70s to the 90s, there was this whole different transition on how you get to school. They actually sent a bus 15 miles to come pick me up to take me to school. It is totally different.
Well, you know what that was about, right?
The integration. They wanted to get more. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
When I was a kid, see, they weren't trying to integrate you. They were trying to segregate you. So, no, that way we were like cattle trapped in a certain area. And you take your Playboy books, things like that, things of that nature. They had plastic on them.
Yeah.
You couldn't walk in a store and read anything about sexual things. I remember one time I came in and my grandparents were talking and she said, "Do you know so-and-so down the street broke her leg?" "No, girl, no, she didn't." And I'm sitting there. I'm like, "I just saw her. She didn't break her leg." They talk about, "Get out of here, boy." That was code talk for she got pregnant. They didn't talk in front of children and things. See, the whole world was so different. You had a child would never say a cuss word in front of an adult. Never.
Yeah.
It was a different kind of era. We were sitting watching something and I said, "Dang." And my grandmother said, "Boy, don't you ever say that again." I said, "All I said was D-A-N-G, dang." She said, "Boy, that's kitty cussing."
So oh my God.
We couldn't say dang. We couldn't say shoot.
Yeah.
And you couldn't play with guns on Sunday.
What?
I'm telling you, it was like the Bible Belt or something, you know? People, like I said, now you got the phones, kids know everything. I would tell you, my grandmother, she had a Ringer washer, and they just came out with dryers, just in the mid-50s.
Yeah.
And she would wash the clothes and give them to me and my brother and tell us to take them to the laundromat to dry. When back then, if you were 11, 10, you did grown-up stuff. You worked. See, kids don't have to do anything today. Their parents do it all. Take them everywhere, do them everything, give them everything. It wasn't like that. They did. So she says, take these clothes, but don't go down the alley. We're like, why not go down the alley? She said, there'd be old men in the alley, be ravishing young boys. Mm. Well, oh, you know, we went down the alley, Dominique.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what ravish meant. If I would have had a clue, I would have never went down that.
The holiday season is the best season. If you're listening to this podcast, thank you. I'm very grateful to have a platform where I can speak with people I love and discover new things. Thank you to the folks in Africa listening consistently to the pod, folks in France. Everybody, thank you. I believe communication is the key to a happy life. And I hope this show is helping people who are listening. Having my grandfather on, dream come true. And I hope you all take some time to be with the people you love this holiday season. What was your relationship with your parents?
Back then, if Joe Blow said you did something, you did it. If Miss Ann said you broke her window, you broke her window. You didn't talk back to parents. Mm-hmm. They call that sassing. You didn't have a say. I hated that. Dominique. Mm. I hated it. I said, when I get to be an adult, if I ever have children, they're going to be able to say whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between how I raised my kids as opposed to how I was raised. Because you couldn't talk back. You couldn't defend yourself. You were guilty. If a grown person said you did something, you just did it.
And with that, do you feel like you had any type of say, any kind of conversation, anything that you felt you could be honest with? Did you feel like you had to lie to your parents, or did you feel like you could actually speak to them about things?
Could not. My grandfather, I probably would have been able to talk to him. He died when I was 16.
Yeah.
So I wasn't old enough to ask the kind of questions or to have the dialogue like me and you are having. But
yeah.
With my grandmother, totally out of the question. Totally out of the question. Her way or the highway.
Yeah.
And you know what? That was great for me. And I tell you why it was great.
Why?
Because you couldn't smoke no marijuana in your grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have no girls coming over to your grandmother's house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wanted to get out so I could do what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it pushed you out of the house instead of
wanting to be. She didn't push, not on purpose.
Yeah.
She wanted me to stay. She would have loved for me to stay. You know, back then you had a phone. The girl would call the phone. As soon as the girl would call, I'd be on the phone, Dominique. My grandmother would be, boy, I'm expecting a phone call.
Oh, man.
So, you know, I said, no, I got to get out and get my own. I think today, why so many people stay at home for so long, one reason is the jobs are not there.
Yeah.
The second reason is parents make it easy for them. They can do anything they want in the house. If the kids could not do what they wanted to do in the house, they would get out. Mm-hmm. But if it's comfortable there, you can do anything you want, you know.
To your kids, how do you feel like you got them out the house? I mean, you gave them the space, and that's something I always admired about you. You would tell me these stories about raising Big John and Will and Carmen and all them, and you would always point out the fact that you weren't aggressive towards their feelings. You would let them speak their mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How do you feel you actually pushed them out of the door, or how did you prepare them to be able to get out on their own instead of clinging to you?
One thing my friends would tell me, and some of them had problems with their children, they would say to me, I don't want my kids to go through what I went through. Hmm. Because what we went through, you guys couldn't take it. Because everything is just here for you. Back then, everything was manual. When John and Bill wanted to drive, for instance, they got a job. They got a little job, playground. So I took all their little money. I gave them maybe a couple dollars or something.
Yeah.
They getting paid and they giving their checks to me. Why? When they had to go to school, they had to catch the bus. Mm-hmm. John asked me, he said, all the other kids, parents take them to school. How come you know, I said, well, I tell you what, John, call your friend, tell her mother, swing by and pick you up. As you're catching the bus, I ain't taking you. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't because I was lazy or anything like that. When it snowed or when it rained, I would get up, we'd go to the bus stop, and we'd sit in the car until the bus came. And then, you know, they would get on the bus. But I wanted them to be self-sufficient. That's how I did it. Yeah. They didn't get anything for free. Everything they had to do, they had to do it. So they were used to it. By the time they got to be, you know, 17 and 18, we would give them the car. And I would go to work. They would take LeVon to the train station and they would go to school. We started giving them responsibility because we had taught them. I taught them how to wash their clothes when they were 11 or 12.
Yeah.
No, the mother started teaching John how to cook. We started training our kids as they grew up and not just giving them stuff. And I think that's where a lot of parents mess up. They give their kids everything that they want.
Do you feel like since you were so open with them that they actually accepted a lot of that? Would they come to you and speak to you about the things that you didn't speak to your parents about? Do you feel like that was more of a avenue that they would take, or did they, or did some of them shy away, or what did you feel like it did for them?
We could always have conversations about whatever it was, even with the girls. Mm-hmm. They felt free enough to talk to me, to ask me, because if you can't ask your father, who can you ask?
Yeah.
You know, and there were certain things. LeVon was a very good mother. That's my ex-wife, for those who don't know. And she would tell Carmen things like, don't have nobody driving here blowing the horn for you. They better come up and knock on this door and get you properly and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you know, we were teaching them things. I talked to my boys about sex. My basic conversation was this. Since John is my stepson, Bill is my natural son, I sat them down and I said, John, you know how it is not to be living with your father. Bill, you know how it is not to be living with your father. I said, don't do that to my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And they nodded. I said, don't do it. Make sure that you are your children's parent. You know, don't just run out here and be having babies and things like this. And they listen.
Yeah.
John
yeah.
had one mistake with Ashley. She was born out of wedlock, but that's all right. He was an excellent father. He did the right thing. Only thing I can say is I'm proud of all my children, grandchildren as well.
I appreciate that.
All of you guys are just fantastic. It's a, I guess the what people would say, I'm blessed.
Yeah, understood. I lucked out because I had so many examples like that because, you know, my mother had me very young.
Yeah.
And so my biggest fear, and I always say this to people, my biggest fear when I was younger was to be someone's baby daddy. And that was because I didn't want to grow up with a kid living the way that I did, where I got Big John when I was in middle school, but from birth to middle school, I didn't have like a father, but my grandpa was my father figure. So it was like when I finally got that father figure, it was like, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be. I wanted to be like this. By my choice, I wanted to wait until I was married and hopefully have a kid and it be raised as a married child. I'm very fortunate I'm on that path. Everyone, you know, like you said, you gave them a clear example, and still one of them actually had an example that went against what you taught them, but all you can do is hope for the best with your kids, right?
I tell my kids, told them all the time, they couldn't, even if they tried, be as stupid as I was when I was younger. And I mean that seriously. I did so many things that I would even be embarrassed to say. Mm. And that was because of lack of direction. Yeah. And I realized that. Now, there are some people, you included, you guys, no matter where y'all were, you're going to be you. You're going to be you. But then there are people like me. We need direction. Hmm. See, everybody doesn't need direction for some reason. You one of them kids. I knew it from the first time I met you. I don't care what circumstance you would have grown up in. You would have came out okay. I don't know what it is that some people have. It took me a while. I was about 28 before gain maturity or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, I had no direction. My grandfather died when I was 16. So I was basically on my own from 16 up. Mm. I could stay out as long as I want, do anything I wanted. I was the man of the house. when there was a bump in the night, I had to go check it out.
Yeah.
So I lacked a lot of direction and made a lot of errors and did a lot. Let me tell you one dumb thing that I did.
Okay.
I was 17. I got a job at the post office. I graduated from high school when I was 17, but I couldn't get a job for about 6 months because I wasn't going to be 18 yet. But this lady at the post office said, "You're so close to being 18, I'm going to let you work here." Now, I started at the post office making all that good money and stuff. Mm-hmm. And one day I called my friend and I said, "Hey, man." I said, "What's up?" He said, "What's up?" I said, "Let's quit our jobs and go to Chicago and hang out." He said, "Bet." And that's what we did. I'm almost embarrassed to say it. Don't ask me what I was thinking about. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't. How stupid can you be? If there would have been a man in my life, you know that would have never happened.
Yeah.
But my grandmother, "Yeah, baby, they working you too hard down there at the post office."
And see, it's funny you say this. And of course, if I never asked you, I would have always assumed, no, Butch has never been that type of person. Of course, I would never. I've always felt like you were a step ahead of all of us, of course, because you... your grandpa. So like, it's like, right. Oh, we look at you like you got it together. You've done so well. And just to hear that small story kind of blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, you need direction. And that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. The line of work that you have chosen will make it extremely difficult for you to bond with your children the way I have bonded with mine, being because I'm there 100% of the time.
Yeah.
The problem is, even if you go on the road, for instance, to sing or do whatever, you're not with your kid.
Yeah.
He knows who you are. He loves you, but you don't know him. You really don't know him because you're not there. You're gone all the time. And he can be any way he feels like you could be for that little time that you guys are together. I kind of experienced that with Shari, by me and her mother being divorced and me not seeing her all the time. Mm-hmm. She was a bit older. Like with Bill, he was with me. Bill and John, we were a trio until they got to be 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that makes it hard. So go out of your way to bond. When my wife left, when we got divorced, she remarried and her husband was in the military and he relocated to Germany. I talked to Bill every week over the phone. I sent him tapes of Rap City. So I record. Do you remember Rap City by any chance?
Yeah. Big Tigger is my guy. I remember Rap City.
Okay. So I watch Rap City. I send it to him. The next day, I sit down, put the recorder, the tape in, going to record the songs. And oh my God, half the songs that they played yesterday, they play in a day, which meant that I had to edit those tapes. That's how I got into rap music.
Yeah.
Because I had to listen to it every day for 3 years.
Yeah.
In order to send him the tape. But the bottom line is what I'm saying is I was in touch with my son. He was gone, but we were on the phone, you know, at least once a week. And I'm sending him tapes and money and we're communicating. Go out of your way to keep in contact with your kids if your job should have to take you away from home.
I always tell people I know that I chose the weirdest passions to have, because a lot of people think what I do is really, really cool. And it is. I'm not going to act like I don't enjoy what I do, but I understand just how unusual it is. And the idea that I might be out, or I might be fortunate enough to create a life where I can be in the city that I created. But, you know, family means so much to me that I'll never allow that to change. You know, I lucked out this year and I was able to do Thanksgiving at my house this year and have everybody. We got to get you down to the house soon so you can see everything as well. But I understand my mind state when it comes to having family around. So I'll never be that person who pushes family away. You don't have to worry about that.
Well, not pushing away. It's happened to friends of mine here. In other words, they wanted to be in management. I have a friend who wanted to be in management. So in order to be in management, you got to be able to go and do when they tell you. I turned down management because I couldn't be with my sons at the basketball games. I couldn't go. They could make me be anywhere they wanted me to be. But if I stayed out of management, I could be assured of a steady schedule where I knew where I could, you know, participate with my sons or what have you. So that's what I'm saying. You don't even have to be leaving town. But I mean, this friend of mine, he said, you know, he wished he had the same relationship with his kids as I do with mine. And the difference is he was chasing the management thing. So when they had the basketball game, well, he couldn't make it. You know what I mean? He provided everything for them. Now, don't get me wrong. And they love their dad and he loves them. But it's not the same way. A lot of times people don't have the same relationship with their grandparents that me and you have.
Yeah.
Where we can just sit back and talk and be free and say whatever and be comfortable around one another. Mm-hmm. Even though there's this gigantic age gap. But of course, you've always been more mature than the average person your age. Like I said, some people just, Dom, some people just have it. You just have it. Like I said, your Aunt Carmen, some people just have it. They don't need any direction. They don't need nothing. You just let them out the box and they go.
I knew that you had been divorced before you divorced, as you call her Laverne, I call her Nanny, Levon. Mm-hmm. It's my nanny. How do you feel those two divorces affected you when actually looking into your next? Because now you're with Pat, who I love dearly. How do you think those two divorces helped you grow into the person that you are now, to be a better lover to your now wife?
My first wife, we got married when I was 21. We were just kids. We were just children when we got married. We didn't know anything. I already told you how stupid I was. But really, man, I just recklessly crazy. Mm-hmm. We never stopped loving each other. That never changed. Mm-hmm. It's just that we were so crazy. I'll show you. We separated and what have you. But the feelings always stayed the same. And she got married and was married for 25 years. I was friend with her husband. And I got remarried. We never stopped being friends.
Yeah.
We got to be closer after we got divorced. And we both realized that we had made a mistake, but sometimes that happens. You know, you can't go back now. You know what I mean? That door closed. That door closed on us. But that didn't mean we couldn't be friends. And when she passed, oh my goodness, I'm still not quite over it because we've known each other since I was 14.
Yeah.
So the older you get, the more you cherish the people you've known the longest.
Of course.
Everybody else is new in your life. So those people who you've known for years become more valuable to you, if that answers the question any about the divorce thing. I was just young. And the second divorce, as you know, that was my wife. She wanted to get a divorce. So,
yeah.
So she never quite explained that to me or to the kids or anybody. She just one day out of nowhere. I mean, there was nothing. It was out of left field.
No. I remember how out of left field it was for all of us. It wasn't just you. All of us were confused.
Yeah, she had some inner demons, and I think that she thought that she could get rid of them by doing what she was doing. But you can't run from yourself.
True.
That's the bottom line. You can't run from yourself.
But with that happening, because you know that I not to that scale, of course, but I've been with someone that broke up with me and really didn't give me a great solid reason. How do you think that affected you when you walked away with it? Because I can only imagine being with someone as long as you were with Nanny, and then next thing you know, you're single. Like, I mean, I live in a generation now where, you know, being single now it's like, okay, I got to get on Tinder and meet people, you know, like stuff like that. Like, I don't know what I would do now. I can only imagine when you went through that. You went through decades together in a whole different world when you came out of that marriage. Like, what did that feel like? Were you nervous to get back into the game? Did you even want to get back to the game? Like, how did that even happen in your brain? How did you get to the, cause you, I feel like you landed in a great spot. Pat is one of my favorite people in the world. To be where you were with Nanny to get there, like, that space must have been hard for you.
Actually, I think it's your personal outlook. My favorite song is by a punk group, and the name of the song is Face the Pain. Mm-hmm. And the first line in the song is, I have to end this suffering. Mm. What will be done to me, I'll do myself. And that's how I've always looked at things. You know, when my grandfather died when I was 16, it occurred to me at that point that anything that I was going to achieve, I was going to have to do it myself. Plus, take care of my grandmother in the process. Mm-hmm. So looking at things, it's like when you're playing a sport or something, and the guy fouls you, and you look at the ref, and the ref didn't call a foul. I never looked at it that way. Try and foul me. I hope you do. I'm going to make it anyway. That's always been the way I looked at things. I don't care what you put in front of me. I'm going forward until I can't go. Mm-hmm. They're going to take me out on my shield, like playing basketball and getting your leg broke.
I remember that.
Yeah. I've always been that person. And what further spurred it on is some years ago, I went to Chicago and we went to the Science and Technology exhibit, and they had an exhibit with ping pong balls. They had six tubes. If you can imagine this in your head, six tubes with a glass on top of it, with holes on top of the glass so anything could fall down the tube. You follow me so far?
Yeah.
And above that, they had 1,000 ping pong balls. And those balls would drop one at a time every 3 seconds. And those balls could bounce around those tubes. And they could go in those tubes any kind of way, willy-nilly.
Yeah.
But 999 times, they always made a pyramid. Think about that.
Yeah.
That's probability. Mm-hmm. Once I saw that, I started understanding probability and the things that you do that will make things probable for you on the good side. Mm. I don't think negatively. So when that happened with my wife, it was just another thing that happens in life that you got to get over. Just another thing to go through. If you ask your uncle and your father this question, if you're surrounded by 100 of the enemy and they want to kill you, and they're heavily armed, and you're surrounded by yourself, what do you do? You know what they're going to tell you? They're going to tell you what I told them. Kill them all. Mm. In other words, don't go into a scenario looking at the bad stuff. Go in looking about how you're going to take care of it. And that's how I've always looked at it. So when your grandmother decided that that's what she wanted to do, I had to respect that. Yes, it hurts. Mm-hmm. Getting shot hurts, but you get better. You know, getting punched in the face hurts. Nothing hurts forever. You know, like you were there when I broke my leg.
Yeah.
Did you see the response I had?
You were the most calm, broken leg person I've ever seen in my life.
That's the way I approach it.
Yeah.
Pain and stuff ain't got nothing to do with what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? I said, these white people are not going to stop me from having a good life. It's just not going to happen. And I can say that when I was in grade school, each grade, this is what our teacher told us when we were young. They said that you're not going to get a fair shot with white people. You have to be twice as good as whatever you do in this white world. And that's how we were taught before we could move around white people. You know, at one time, we were all, black people all lived in one area.
Yeah.
You couldn't live outside of that area. So they instilled that in us. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of drive, I took it to heart. So, no, you just keep on moving, man. Bad things happen in life is how you look at it. Let me tell you this. My mother died when I was 3 years old, but she got pregnant in 1948. Imagine this. Can you imagine what it must have been like for a female to get pregnant in 1948 out of wedlock? Mm. It was, you were a hoe. You were, it's just... In my graduating class in 1965, we had two girls that get pregnant and they graduated because it was so close to them graduating.
Yeah.
They weren't even showing yet. See, the world has changed. People didn't get pregnant out of wedlock back then. People say, well, that's sad that, you know, you didn't get to know your mother or anything like that. Depends on how you look at it. I was lucky that my grandmother came out and saved me. Mm. It's all in how you look at it, Doc. Mm. Yeah, I've never been a person to feel sorry for myself. So you just got to do what you got to do. And that's pretty much how I felt like it. So when she left, it wasn't the easiest thing, you know. I had to start all over, get another house. Just to, but it never occurred to me that that wouldn't happen. Because I'm the kid, baby.
Oh, man.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and a mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loading lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase for kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
You can listen to my music on all streaming platforms, and you can check me out for more information at domlemore.com, where you can get anything and everything Dom Lemore.
Child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase for kids from 1 to 92. Many times, many ways, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas to you.
One of the episodes I had, I spoke to a friend about having a conversation with his son, who's a baby now. I was like, have you thought about the conversations you would have with your kid about the police and things that they would have to do? In the past, you had the talk with Big John and everybody about how to act around police and stuff, right? How did that go?
It went perfectly okay. I normally talk to Bill and John at the same time. I set them down and I said, you know, you guys go to integrated school. And those people there at those schools, they're very nice people. They're great people. But everybody's not like that. I said, you've been raised in an environment that has sheltered you from the evils of some of the things that can happen in the world. I said, but all white people aren't like that. I said, so when the police pulls you over, if he pulls you over and you haven't done anything, then you know that this is a racial pullover. Don't say anything other than what they ask you. As a matter of fact, Daryl was there for that conversation.
Oh, so you had all, not only the kids, but you also had cousins there.
Well, get this. Daryl calls me up at work and he says, Butch, do you have $300? And I'm like, yeah, I got $300. What's up? He said, well, see, I was in Jennings. And when he said Jennings, I was like, Jennings was the worst racist spot in the area. Mm. When he said Jennings, I was like, oh, boy. I said, so what happened? He said, well, I pulled out from the curb and the guy went, woo, you know, the light pulled me over. And he said, you were speeding. And I said, speeding? Can I see your radar? Oh, my God. What did I tell them? I told you, don't ask them nothing. Just get the ticket. The dudes, Daryl said, the policeman looked at him and hollered back at his partner and said, hey, he wants to see a radar. Say, you got a broke tail light. He had the speakers in the car. Mm-hmm. He said, Butch, I didn't have them on. He wrote him a ticket for loud. He wrote $500 worth of tickets on Daryl. Mm. I loaned Daryl the money. He gave it back to me. Mm-hmm. But see, some people don't listen.
No, for sure. And see, that's the reason why I brought that one up is because a lot of people don't know that that happens. They don't realize that Black people in St. Louis have to have this conversation with their parents sometimes because there are areas, like you said, like Jennings, North County, and specific, like the area that I was told to watch out for, which is funny because the tickets I've received in St. Louis didn't even happen in North County. They happened in Clayton. I got one in U City and I think Maplewood. Those are the only areas I ever got tickets.
Well, North County is Black.
But also you say Jennings, but then you go up like the Ferguson area. Like if you're driving up in those areas, you get pulled over quick. And I know other people who did. A lot of white people don't even realize this is a thing. They don't realize you have to do that with your kids when you're Black in St. Louis.
They don't understand. Mm-hmm. They don't get it. I was talking to this racist guy at work. We knew he was racist, and somebody called me over, and they were asking me a question about this thing they were debating with this racist white guy. After I heard what they were talking about, I said, oh, I get it. So I said, well, let me ask you this. I said, see that Black lady over there? He said, yeah. Suppose she said that you grabbed on her butt. He said, nobody would believe that, but let's just say it goes to court. And when you get to court, your defense attorney is Black. The judge is Black. Mm. Prosecutor is Black. The jury is Black. What do you think going to happen? Mm-hmm. What do you really think is going to happen? And his eyes were open.
Yeah.
He said, I never looked at it like that. I said, well, there's only two ways to look at it. With 13% of the population and 50% of the jail population, either Black people are born criminals or there's a lot of racism going on. Mm-hmm. And if you say criminals, we know where the races are.
Oh, man. When you say that, that's so incredible because whenever I am in a scenario where something racist like that happens, Mike Brown, I remember I was in St. Louis when that all happened, or anything in that particular area, I try to voice to people that know me, what if it was me? Because that's the only way to open people's eyes to, oh, well, you would never do this. And it's like, exactly. But if I was in that scenario, they would try to make the narrative, hey, this Black guy who, you know, has a Michael Jordan jersey on, or this guy who has a hoodie on, he's a dangerous Black guy and he was a threat. And it doesn't matter if I am a threat or not. The public are going to take their mental vision of me and what I look like to them, and they're going to flip it the way that they want to flip it to feel okay about what happened.
It's just the way they were raised. Everything, mm-hmm. when I was coming up, everything good was white. Black people never did anything that was any good. The only time you saw us was running around with lion claws in the movies or what have you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the things have definitely changed a lot. Imagine what it was like before cameras.
Yeah.
Dominique. Like I was just visiting my friend here and he was telling me about when he got locked up for 10 days. Mm-hmm. Some people had that he knew were involved in murdering a guy. And him and a friend of his happened to be at the guy's house. They happened to come out. The police, they don't let you say nothing. Mm-hmm. They locked him up for 10 days. I said, on what charge? He said, they didn't even say a charge. I mean, mm-hmm. This is what they did 50 years ago. See, stuff like that is incomprehensible to young people today.
Yeah.
But back then, they didn't have to say nothing. They take you, beat you, do whatever. You resisted arrest. See, people in my age, we know that. But the young people feel a little bit more emboldened nowadays because they weren't raised under the same oppression that we were. So they get the feeling, like I used to tell John and Bill, I said, don't get it confused and think you white. Don't do that. Don't talk to the white guy and jump out the police and say, what's your badge number? All that. No, don't do that. Just sit in the car and say, yes, sir. No, sir. Get your ticket and go on.
I don't know if I ever told you this during this episode. This is our Christmas episode of Whoa. The Black Man Talking. The Black Man Talking Emotions podcast. So I appreciate you taking the time. And at the end of every episode, I always do the same thing. We've gone through all of these subjects. All I want to know now is, how do you feel?
It's always fascinating to me as an older person to talk to young people, because when I was young, I used to sit at the foot of all older people and listen to what they had to say. I think it had a lot to do with my success in life. And I try to pass that on to my kids and grandkids. So anytime you have an opportunity to have a conversation like this where other people can hear and say, you know, that's an old guy, that's his perspective. Maybe they'll be interested in someone else's perspective. Or maybe it'll even help get a grasp on what it was like in the before time, as I call it.
Yeah. I'm gonna make you do this one more time. I want to know an emotion. How do you feel emotionally after this interview?
My generation didn't deal in emotion. You were a man. Men didn't cry. They didn't feel pain. And that's the way I was raised. And that's the way I am. There's only one emotion allowed in my generation. Okay. Anger. No crybaby stuff like.
All right, so I get it. I understand. It was different. I understand. Just for me.
Okay.
How are you feeling? Give me an emotion. Come on now.
Let's see.
Here it is. Come on now. Come on. Dig you know, deep.
I got to dig deep now.
Come on now.
It's coming. I'm trying. It's coming. You know, I'm exceedingly proud of you as well as the rest of the grandchildren and what have you, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
I appreciate
That's my feeling right now. I'm glad to be a part of it. That's all I can say.
Well, and there it is.
Happy. I'm pretty happy. I'm relaxed, you know.
I appreciate you. Cheers to you.
Anytime, Dom. Anytime.
I want to thank you for listening to the Black Man Talking Emotions podcast. The opening quote credit goes to Robert Byrd. And shout out to my grandpa Butch for being on the pod. Please subscribe to the podcast and give us a good rating. 5 stars, please. And thank you. Also, tell me your stories about these subjects at DOML_AMOUR on Instagram or at domlamour.com. I'm Dom Lamour. Much love.